getting to us, slowed consumer spending, health care liabilities, state underfunded pensions, and high levels of unemployment. City management's recommendation to the City Council relative to budget development has been and continues to be that we used a balanced approach. That means looking at revenue enhancements as well as spending cuts. And we've done, a pretty good job of looking at spending cuts, at looking at reductions. And I think that most would agree, if you look at both sides of that equation, that is the equivalent of running government like a business. The city's response to date in general has been fiscally conservative. We've been in a maintenance mode, and our philosophy has been wants versus needs. Last year, we talked about a good governance model and having a perspective going forward. We've looked at realignment of short and long-term policies. We've deferred capital projects. And over the past 3 years, we've reduced our operating budgets by more than $4 million, from $18 million down to $14 million. The city's response to date to the economy and the challenges that it presents has been to increase the telecommunications tax, and that was in 2009, where we raised it from 4.5% to 6%. Through the budget development, we have instituted administrative policies to eliminate education reimbursement. We've reduced the scope of our health and benefit program. We've implemented ESDA fees for services that they provide. We've refinanced debt and saved more than $1 million. We've designed several public works projects in-house rather than contracting the engineering out. We've extended the life cycle of capital items, including vehicles, computers, and equipment, large and small. We've reduced and will be this year eliminating the city's contribution to the LEAF program. We've reduced the snow and ice control program. We've reduced professional development and training. We've implemented a shared adjudication program with North Aurora and Batavia. We've eliminated the annual summer employee picnic. We've eliminated the annual appreciation dinner. We've implemented voluntary furlough. And we've implemented a workforce reduction strategy that includes the reduction in the number of full-time positions and replacing full-time with benefits with part-time and no benefits. And Stephanie will follow up on a more detailed presentation looking at our history over the last few years with regard to our workforce strategy and where we've been and where we are now. In addition, we've reduced non-emergency overtime. We've implemented wage freezes for management. We've implemented limited wage adjustments for non-management. In the past, we've negotiated wage concessions. We've reduced hours of work. We've implemented hazardous material spill reimbursement policy. And we've reduced the number of fax machines and postage machines. In addition, we looked at a survey that was just recently completed by the Village of Gurnee, and they surveyed, and we just received this in December, 73 Illinois communities regarding what they had done specifically as far as revenue enhancements go to address the challenge of their budget and budget deficits. We took the 73 communities and we specifically pulled out of that data 23 which were non-home rule so that we could compare to those and see what those non-home rule communities did. As I said, looking at the equation, we've cut more than $4 million, but we've not really addressed the revenue enhancement other than the telecommunications tax 3 years ago. Other communities have looked at implementing amusement tax, whether it's on devices or exhibitions. We do have on books an amusement tax. It's not really implemented in the past. We've really not implemented that. Some communities have implemented a vehicle sticker program. daily parking fee increases, commuter parking fee increases, parking meters, plan review fee increases, business licenses, cigarette vendor licenses, cat licenses, dog licenses, food and beverage tax, building permit fee increase, commercial scavenger licenses. They've also increased their liquor license fees. As you know, we just updated our liquor license code, and other than adding new classifications with corresponding license fees, we did not increase our licenses. Some communities, non-home rural communities, have implemented tow impoundment fees. Montgomery was one that recently did that. They've increased restaurant fees. They've implemented a storm sewer utility fee. They've implemented gasoline tax. They've increased water and sewer fees. They've implemented taxicab licensing. They've implemented automobile rental and leasing fees. They sold public properties. That is one of the things that we have also looked at and completed, as well as increasing parking violation fees, which we just recently did as well. Some have established business districts. Some have increased cemetery fees. Some have established TIFs, tax increment financing districts. Some have increased right-of-way permit fees. And some have decided to charge for not-for-profit permits. Right now, for example, our building permits, we incur the cost of plan review as well as inspections. We don't charge for not-for-profits. Some have implemented a 50-50 sidewalk program as well. Some have increased false alarm fees. Some have implemented cell tower lease fees, pole attachment fees, and in general, they have considered a cost recovery approach for all user fees, meaning that if a service is costing them, whether it's a review or an inspection, they're trying to implement cost to pass those along just to cover their own fees, their own costs. Moving forward, staff's recommendation in working with the council is a philosophy that we plan ahead. One of the things that we want to do beginning this year is to look at a comprehensive five-year long-term capital improvement program. Those have been done incrementally, not comprehensively, on a department-by-department basis. But moving ahead, we'd like to do that so that we have a better handle on what we're doing for the next 5 years out across the organization. We're also looking our philosophy to be basing fiscal decisions on facts using data such as the comparable community data that we're collecting from like communities. To establish and follow financial policies, and as you know, we implemented several of those about 3 years ago, and to use a balanced approach to consider revenues plus expenditures. And I think my recommendation as far as a fiscal philosophy going forward is not so much wants versus needs any longer. I think it's living within our means is the perspective that we should be taking. And I think that ultimately, whatever direction the council gives us or takes, that we need to educate our constituents because it's a lot of information and sometimes it's complicated to know all of the ins and outs and the reasons why decisions were made. So I think that it's very important that we communicate. That's all I have. Be happy to answer questions, but as I said, we do have other staff that also want to present information for you. And the bottom line tonight is, again, we're looking for direction. It's my understanding that the council wants to give direction to the staff as far as the budget development, and we just want to know what that is. We're happy to take input and incorporate it into our budget process. So that's what we're looking for at the end of the evening. So,
tonight indeed isn't designed as discussion, so by all means, let's have a good, thorough discussion. Mr. Singer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary, regarding the city's response to date, you indicated reducing the operating budget. We did so from $18 million to $4 million.
Okay. 14.
I'm sorry?
18 to 14.
We saved 4 million.
Yeah, oh, we saved 18 to 14.
Correct.
Okay, I didn't understand that. Okay. Now, and you go on to express the city's response to date, and you mentioned all these different items that we've done to, of course, reduce our expenditures. Is that part of the $4 million savings?
Yep.
All of that? Is,
okay. Yes, sir, it is.
All right, fine. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Dorothy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Lady in red.
Yeah. Yes, because only as close
people. You and Chuck Brown called each other tonight.
Oh, no. That's very good. No, I didn't call him. What is the Implement 50-50 Sidewalk Program? Can you explain what that means?
Some communities have a program whereas they have a tree planting program.
Okay.
But they also, in addition to that, have a 50-50 program, whereas if a homeowner wanted a sidewalk to be repaired or installed, for example, and it wasn't on the list, that would essentially move them to the top of the list.
If they put half of the cost of, or paid for
correct.
Half of the cost.
Correct.
And then increase ROI permit fees?
Right-of-way.
Right-of-way?
Permit fees.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Mr. Marks.
Mary, is that the $4 million in budget saving? Is that actual to actual or budget to budget for the 4 years?
That is budget to budget. Actual to actual might be more than that.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question. Okay.
Right.
And that might be a number we probably could use at some point. I don't know how hard it would be to get.
Your actuals are actually in your budget, and the audit.
Yeah, we just have to compare.
And we don't have this year's actuals, until the fall, but we could look at last fiscal year's actual.
Yeah, it'd probably be good something to let the citizens know.
Mr. Cummings, you look very pensive. Has everyone had a chance to meet the new alderman, Don Cummings? Isn't he something? The quieter you are, the better you are, Don. That's all. I know you're probably out meeting everybody, but this is Don, so. He's about a foot smaller than Piper, so in that regard, we don't have to be intimidated.
It's all the way around, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Don.
Mary, I just wanted to ask you, so you said the nonprofits, we don't charge permit fees or inspection fees?
Correct.
So, what would be an example? Like
Northern Illinois Food Bank. $36,000.
Living Well Cancer Center.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I'm in charge of a nonprofit, and everybody else charges us for everything. I mean, it's the cost of doing business.
Well, I think the point is, it's not that we don't want to be benevolent, but there was a time that we could afford that. And in my opinion, we can no longer afford that.
I agree. And I think that is more the standard of just getting charged what everyone gets charged.
I mean, if we want to be benevolent, there's always a chance of charging 75% of the normal cost or something. But, I mean, I think that's something we should take a peek at.
Does that apply to Del Norte, or do we consider Del Norte to be profit?
In the past, technically, yes, it would.
Because I expect they will expand some more.
But during the PUD process in the past, we have worked with them so that they have paid some fees. They've contributed towards some, but not the full amount.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Stephanie has a history of our workforce strategy that she would like to present to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am. It was good. Was light sufficient for you, Steph?
Okay.
And I'd like to present for you upon Mary's request. Give me 1 second. Okay. This will be short and sweet, but we thought it was important maybe to give you a brief overview of where we've been and where we've gone as far as staffing levels. There's always a lot of talk out there as far as overstaffed, understaffed, right staff, right size, wrong size. So I thought we'd give you just a quick brief overview. Starting with the basics, this is our org chart. I assume most of you know how the city is organized, but just in case, I did want to point out there are 6 departments. There are some things up there that you don't see that you might expect to see, which would be, for instance, TRICOM. TRICOM is not a department of the city. It is
guy, what are you doing over there?
Although we administer the benefits and the personnel for TRICOM, they are not a department of the city, so they're not included in this presentation. It's not that we don't love them, but we do, because I see Stacy back there. ESDA, again, it's a volunteer group similar to SPAC, beautification, so those are not departments of the city. These are your departments of the city: administrative services, community development, economic development, fire, police, and public works. So here's the really what I find the interesting slide. We went back and we looked back, going back to fiscal year 2004-05 up through what we are currently looking at for 2012-13, and we looked at full-time positions only. So I'm not looking at full-time equivalents. These are totally just full-time positions, which means they're typically anywhere from 30 to 40 hours a work week or more. They are benefited, so they are pension, health insurance, life insurance, those kinds of things. And we're comparing authorized, which means the authorized positions are those positions which the city council has approved in our compensation and classification plan, versus actual, which are the positions that actually had a person in that authorized position for that fiscal year. So hopefully that's clear. So if you look in 2004-05, we had 156 authorized positions. We actually had 153 full-time people on the payroll that year. All the way through the proposed 2012-13, we have 157 authorized positions, and right now we're looking at budgeting for an actual 146 positions. Our high years were 08-09. If you'll recall, back in 05, we went through a whole comprehensive comp plan, organizational plan. We had a consultant come in, look at how we do things, how we compare to our comp communities, what staffing level should be, what our compensation should be. So you'll see that was our high at 161, based on there were some recommendations they made that we added positions. I think also around that time we brought on the water treatment plant, so there were some recommendations there as far as how many employees we might need to run that. To again our low, which is coming up. If you compare authorized positions from 08-09 to the 2012-13 proposed, we're about 2.5% below. And if you look at actual numbers, we're actually about 7% below in the number of full-time employees. So again, this does not include interns, part-time who don't get benefits, crossing guards, paid-on-call firefighters, those kinds of things. Mary talked a little bit about what some of our strategies have been over the past several years, so I just wanted to pick out a few of the higher things, why we see that number reduce. For instance, we had a finance director who retired. When that person retired, we reclassified that position down, meaning we took the pay grade that that position was at, we looked at the duties, we rewrote it, we reduced that pay grade about 7.5%, and we filled that position with a lower position, which was the finance manager. Back in January of 08, we had a utility billing technician resign. At that time, we decided maybe we can do without that position, so we did not fill that position. And we, in fact, left that position vacant for 3 years until just this past year, based upon audit recommendations and those things, we filled it now with an accounting supervisor. So that was a reclassification up. However, with that vacancy for 3 years, we're not even to that point of the dollars we've saved yet to what we've spent on the new position. Now, obviously, that'll change as the years go on, but we're also looking at different types of functions there. In 2009, we had a human resource specialist position, which was a full-time position. When that position vacated, we looked again at the organization. What did we need? We knew that times were tough there, so we reclassified that position to a payroll specialist, which is a part-time position, no benefits. In fact, that position only works 2 days every other week. So we went from a 40-hour position to a 20-hour pay period position. We had an administrative assistant who retired just last June. And in looking again how we move forward with that, we opted to fill that position with two interns. So the interns, there's one that works in community development and one that works in economic development. They are eligible for IMRF, which is the pension, because they work more than 1,000 hours a year, and that's IMRF standards, but they are not eligible for any health or life benefits. And then lastly, there's 11 full-time positions that remain vacant from this time period we're looking at. There's one in engineering, there's one in community development, there's three in police, one in fire, one in streets, three in electric, and one in water, wastewater. I'm just giving you the broad overview, broad brush. Okay, we have a position in engineering. We have one position in engineering. We have one in community development. We have three in the police department. One in the fire department, one in the streets department or division, three in electric, and one in the water wastewater. So again, Mary had mentioned a lot of the recommendations we make or the information we gather, we tie it to our comparable communities, our benchmark communities. This is the same list you see pretty much every year. This is the list that was devised by when they did the study back in 2005. So these are the communities that they feel are most comparable to the city of Geneva, and we look to them to see what are they doing, how do we compare, where do we fit in. You'll remember last year we did a full comprehensive benchmark study, which we looked at individual positions, and we do that every 5 years. In the in-between years, we're only looking at overall. So overall, what are these communities doing, and that's in regards to compensation. So I was curious, when I started working on this project, looking at staffing levels, how do we compare to our comparables? We know how we compare salary-wise. We did that last year. So how do we compare actually numbers-wise? So we took the population and the number of full-time employees that they had and looked at the average number per 1,000 residents. You have to do a little bit of finagling because we're a little bit different here. Not all cities have a fire department. There's a lot of fire districts. And very few cities actually have an electric utility. So we have to take those numbers out. So first you'll see the first column is our comparable communities. So if you take all of those communities that responded, which I believe were about 20 of them, per 1,000 residents, they have 5 employees. Geneva overall has 7 employees per 1,000 residents, and that's including our fire and our electric. If you remove the fire and electric, authorized positions and actual, the numbers are minimal, we're at 5 per 1,000 residents. So again, very close to our comparable communities. And then lastly, I thought we should look at a little closer to home. There's nobody really. The Tri-Cities are pretty unique. They're pretty similar as well. All three cities have an electric utility. All three cities have a fire department. All three cities share Tri-Com, share Tri-City Ambulance. So how do we compare with each other? And you'll see there Batavia has approximately 6 per 1,000 residents. St. Charles has 8, and Geneva has 7. So overall, we seem to be fitting into what I'm looking for when I'm doing comparisons, how we're falling, do we need to make massive changes, do we need to look at revamping things. Those are all of my slides. Mary did mention one of the budget standards that we look at is when we're looking at compensation, we do the annual market study. That's not complete yet, but to date, we have received responses from 18 of our comparable communities. And right now, it's averaging 2% increase for next year, some doing more, some doing less. Some have still not made a decision. So that's just kind of where we're at and where we're looking. And again, this is just how we do our information gathering. We go out, and then that's where we come up with what we present to bring as a recommendation to the city council. So it's based somewhat in science. So that's my lengthy presentation.
Mr. Singer.
Thank you, sir. Interesting. Tri-City area, Batavia, 6 full-time employees per 1,000 residents as compared to Geneva's 7, yet Batavia's population is much larger than Geneva's.
Not much larger.
It's a little larger.
For $25,000.
Well, they're like right at 20, and I don't have the number here, but they're like at $25,000, $26,000, and we're at $21,495.
I thought they were much larger than that. Okay. Go back to personnel summary. You indicated that there are 13 positions that are yet to be filled or would be filled.
There are 11 positions that remain unfilled. In other words, there are 11 positions that have been authorized as part of the compensation classification plan, but through looking at how we do things, through cutting other areas, we've opted to so far leave those positions vacant and not fill them.
Okay, then I'm a little confused here about the bar graph you have here that actually authorized in 2012-2013 is 157, and actually we have 146, so that gives me 13 positions.
That's 11. 157.
Oh, it's 146?
157 and 146.
There's your 11. Okay, that's right. You did well.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I thought that was a trick.
An A for effort there.
That's right.
Teacher?
No, I didn't teach math. As you can see.
Mr. Kilburn? Oh, Mr. Marks?
Stephanie, the police department has three positions that we haven't filled. Are those officers, or do you know what?
There is a traffic safety specialist, there's a record specialist, and there's a police officer. Mm-hmm. We actually have a couple police officer vacancies, but we're filling a couple of those that are recently vacated. But the plan in our discussions with the chief is that we would be able to leave one police officer vacant, one record specialist vacant, and the traffic safety position probably eventually. I don't know if that will ever be resurfaced or not.
And the fire department, I think, had one?
They have one firefighter position.
It is a firefighter position, okay.
When there was a retirement last year, we promoted and did not fill the firefighter.
Okay.
Now's your chance to take another photo, trip guy. It's like the SAG Awards, for God's sake, you're trying to... Yeah, and if anybody, any of the leadership team wants to chime in or present information, we'd love to see you at the podium and hear what you have to say. Yeah. There's also in the dark.
Yeah. I'm wondering about these benchmark communities. I know one year we saw Crystal Lake with a 6% wage increase, which seemed to skew the records, and rather incredible. Are they... high again this year in various aspects, do you know?
Crystal Lake, let me see. Have their information yet?
Crystal Lake have not determined anything yet for the upcoming year. But I think one of the reasons we have, you know, we have 23 communities.
Yeah.
So if you have one who's giving 6 and one who's giving 0, it pretty much, you know, wipes itself out. I would say right now we're looking at the median. Is 2%. The mode, meaning the most common number that's being seen, is 2%, and the mean right now is 1.9% over the 18 responses that we've gotten.
And I think it's important, too, to understand that for validity's sake, that we have to use the same list every year. When we're comparing, we don't pick and choose which ones look the best to us. We take the same 23 communities and then take those numbers and analyze that data. So those are the same list of communities that we've used since we had the compensation study 6-7 years ago. So, and I might also point out, just as a point of information, you may have seen some communities up there, for example, Aurora, which may not seem to be the same characteristics that we have.
Yeah.
When we went through the compensation study, I can't tell you, there were dozens of communities that they looked at. And they looked at characteristics of all of the communities. Population was one of the characteristics that they looked at, but they also looked at the structure, the form of government. Aurora is a ward system. Aurora has a fire department. So they looked at all of those different characteristics of the communities and tried to match up as many with similar characteristics to our form of government, our size, our structure of the organization, so on and so forth. So we're not going to get a perfect match. Some of those are villages. You know, they have a village board with six trustees. So we're not going to get a perfect match with every one of them. But we try to get as many of the characteristics to be similar to Geneva. Those were the ones that the council approved, and those are the ones that we consistently use every year since then. So. Mr. Mayor, we do also, Ellen has a presentation. We've got some information regarding our SSA and also looking.
Ooh, this will be fun. Come on up, Ellen.
SSA number one, but also looking for direction with regard to budget development of the SSA.
Why is Mike Martins the only professional staff person sitting on the right side of the room? Thank you, Mr. Miller. Way to go, Mr. Miller. I was just feeling sorry for my old high school.
Thank you, Randy.
What's that? Perhaps, I don't know. He is a wrestler, we know that. Yeah, exactly.
The award-winning water sign.
The light turned off? Do I one of the lights turned off, Ellen? I'll defer to the...
Yeah, you know what, Dan, you probably do need for the glare. Hi, everyone. Everyone that has been on the council for a while will remember that in 2009, an intra-departmental team totally dissected SSA 1, and we looked at what we were really spending, which showed us to be 30% more than was actually showing up in the fund. And we looked at the level of subsidy. Paul Evans has done a yeoman's job on all the research. He continues to do so. But also putting together this year's budget for SSA number one, which is the downtown, Commander Eric Pastorelli, Public Works Director Dan Dinges, our city engineer Pam Broviak, Tom Dahl, Mary McKittrick all helped. The Economic Development Department oversees SSA number one because we're the main liaison to downtown, but all the expenses are really police and fire, just so that you know. I said fire, I'm sorry. Police and Public Works. Thank you. See, you're listening. Thanks. Okay. I'm going to go through some things quickly. This is what I'm going to run through, a little bit of a history, but starting with the last ordinance, not going from the very beginning in 79. Our current situation, the EAVs are decreasing. We've got a maintenance schedule that Pam's been putting together since she started with us, and the debt schedule, and then I've got a summary of some of the budget issues and some potential expenditure options. Just a reminder that a special service area is an extra layer of taxation in a geographic area where special governmental services are provided in addition to those services provided generally everywhere else. So because this one geographic area is getting special services, the cost of those services are to be paid from revenues collected from taxes levied or imposed within that area. That's the state statute that allows us to form this district. This is the district. This is the latest version. You all have a copy of it in front of you. It's generally downtown. All the commercial areas, the residential ones are exempted out. Any property that was residential in character and construction but is turned into commercial use, full in part, has the levy on it. So in 1997, this was the third restatement of the SSA. It previously had been created in 79. It was expanded and extended in 88. And then again in 97, it was extended to April 30th, 2023. It allows for a maximum tax rate at 0.003 mil. And it allows for the issuance of bonds. And 10% of the expenditures are for non-parking activities. Everything else is to be used for creation and maintenance of parking. When the district was created in 97, the EAV was $21.3 million. You can see what's happened. In 09, when we dissected it, we were at $62 million. Then we took out all the River North condos and went down to $54 million. And this year, we are finding that the district EAV has gone down 15%. and we're expecting it to come in at about $46 million. We went to the assessor's office to identify why the valuation had gone down so steeply when the rest of the community was 4.5%, and we learned, because I asked Paula to go and get the protest records and the hearings to see what kind of notes were made. There were no protests to the tax appeals. I knew I was missing a word. Thanks, Mary. The assessor determined she was going to revalue these on her own. And in front of you, you have a list of the largest. So, for example, the first one, it says 46%. The latest valuation was 46% of the previous years. That some of them went down a whole third. This is kind of hard to read, so you've got it in the handout in front of you, but you can see here a general...
I'm sorry, I just wanted to let the council know that we are contacting the assessor's office and asking to meet with her to see if we can get a better explanation of why the business district went down in EAV of 15% and some specific properties were down, reassessed as much as 30-35%. And those were not requested, as far as any documentation that we've been able to find, by the property owner. This was done by the tax assessor. So we are going to look into this just to try to find out the reasoning behind it and if there's anything that we can do about it.
So. Can it be down?
We don't know at this point. I mean, as far as we know, there's no formal process for us to challenge that, but we would like a better explanation. Because there were no tax appeals by these businesses, we were not notified. It was, as we understand it, it was the tax assessor who made the decision to lower those valuations on her own, some properties more than others. So those, curious, and we would like to find out more information.
Anything to add, Paul?
Bring your business.
Right. Okay, this is a long summary, but starting from 99 forward, you can see the first column is obviously the year. The next column is the EAV. Then you see the budget, and then you can see in 09-10 how it jumped up to 320 because we started to reflect the true value of what was being spent in the district through the general fund. And it was specific services that were downtown only, mainly in the way of street maintenance, snow removal, things that we don't do in the rest of the community. We do downtown because downtown is special, don't get me wrong on that, but this is just a true reflection of the expenditures. Also in that year, the council moved to take the levy up to the maximum possible. You can see as late as 02 and 03, it had also been at the maximum, but it had gone down over the years. And then you can see what we transferred in from the general fund. The other revenue, is it goes up and down for a variety of reasons. Like in 9-10, we bought the Notolini property, and we had to transfer funds in. We had stuff reserved for it. So there's a variety of why there's other revenues coming in. But it's interesting to see the what came in from the property tax, the third one from the right, versus what came in from the general fund, whether it's a 2-to-1 ratio or a 1-to-1 ratio. That's what this shows you, the level of subsidy in the district. You ready for me to go on? You want to stare at that for a second? It's a lot of numbers.
Have a copy of that,
and
if anybody who is on the council now was not present during that debate, or perhaps any questions regarding how that debate evolved with respect to adjusting the SSA, we'd be happy to answer that for you, because it was a interesting discussion, right, Ellen?
Mm-hmm. It was a year's worth of investigation. Yeah. It was good. So,
is it fair to state that the vast majority of business owners throughout the downtown share with us that they do not want to see their services ameliorated in any way?
I think that was the message that came out. The other message...
I think they actually used the word ameliorated, too. Thanks, Chief, for looking at me like, you know, what the heck's Burns doing, for God's sake?
That I don't remember.
No.
Okay. I think I remember, too, the average valuation in the district was $400,000. There were a handful of properties that were much highly valued, and they were all the newer properties. The hotel, Dotson.
Yeah. There was a formula put in place, though, wasn't there? Are you correct of how much the city was going to put in and sharing of the cost? Wasn't there?
It was never a formal policy decision.
No, but there was a discussion. Mm-hmm.
There was considerable discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, there was recommendation to escalate it
gradually.
Gradually. There was a discussion to escalate it immediately. So it was a great discussion. It was actually held at the Public Works facility, so it was a good discussion.
The actual policy question is how much of the extra services provided to the downtown accrue to the businesses and how many accrue to the rest of the citizens of this town who also benefit from having extra services in their downtown. I certainly feel that I like Geneva and appreciate it more because of the extra services we provide to downtown, and I use them. I use the parking lots. I use the plowed streets in the winter, etc. So that's the policy question. How much of the extra services accrue directly to the businesses and how many accrue to all of the citizens of Geneva, and i.e. are paid from the general fund? And it's flopped. It's flopped from the general fund paying more than half to now the general fund paying less than half. But in the proposed budget, it's flopped around. Sure. Clearly, the percentage that's coming from one and the other is flopped around. But that is the policy question. The rest is just the arithmetic of the numbers and what services we need to provide.
Well, the other thing that's gone on that I don't know that we fully captured is several of the parking lots, we've taken them out of the capital fund. Last year, Block 50 got put into capital, not into here, because there wasn't enough funds. So if we were to go a little bit further, we might find there's even more of a subsidy going on.
I'm certainly one who argues that much of the benefit accrues to the town as a whole. Having a viable downtown is what makes Geneva, Geneva. I'm willing to support it.
Okay, who is that? Shorey. The Daily Herald column?
Okay, so this is the maintenance schedule that Public Works has put together. You have it's got orange. This is your big handout. This is an excerpt of it. And it comes and it goes. Every year, the engineering staff goes out and goes parking lot by parking lot and says, okay, how bad is it? What's the service level? Can we move it back a year? For example, the Siegel's lot last year when you saw this was in here for $196,000 for reconstruction. And Chris Bong went out last week and visited and said he thought we could go longer. So he moved it out to 2013 for just a resurface, I believe. But at one point, we thought we might have to totally reconstruct it. So that's changed with them just the last week. But in this, I tried to get the numbers as big as I can, but the average of all these years is $139,000 a year. And the point is we're not capturing $139,000 a year even from the property tax, and that's the main purpose of the SSA. Okay. So here's the debt schedule that exists right now. We did pay off a note that had been written in 2002. Because it was a note and not a bond, it was not classified as debt per the terms of the ordinance, just so that you're aware of that. The Siegel lot, City Administrator Page had put in, and there was a balloon payment for $199,000, and if you look at what the annual payment is, once the note of the loony purchase was bought, there was going to be just enough, if we saved it every year, to have this balloon. But it's still, we got to come up with $199,000 the last year of this bond. Tom Dahl did go to bond counts to the bank and tried to refinance it and was told they did not want to accept the refinance. He's got some ideas on how we maybe could refinance it ourselves and then pay back with the obligation from the SSA. But that's something I'm not prepared to talk to you in depth about tonight. So here's the issues. The EAV has dropped 15%, so we've got decreasing revenues. What's the appropriate level to transfer from the general fund? Should we continue to budget projects to the capital fund? We've got this balloon payment coming up upon us in 5 years. Public Works would love to see a maintenance schedule with a regular fund where we're putting the money in to cover this spreadsheet. And also we've got the master plan coming online, and it's going to recommend parking strategies. So again, what are we going to do to build another parking deck when that time comes? Here's some options. I'm sure there's more that we could think of, but this is what came to mind when we all sat last week in our budget meeting. We can continue to defer parking lot reconstruction and maintenance as we have been doing. We can cut services. Right now it takes two public works staff just to get through. The district is big, and it's grown bigger. With the 2,000 moratorium on parking, we saw all those new buildings expand on East and West State Street. So the district has gotten bigger, and it does take two guys to maintain and get around to plow the snow at a reasonable level of service. And we also have to pay for additional snow plowing as well in really heavy snows, and it does come out of this fund. Some communities lease spaces in public lots where they know that there's only daytime employees. We have several lots where we know they're being filled right away by only employees. We talked earlier about a business district, October 30th, I believe. We talked about that. The Economic Development Commission is going to discuss this next week at their meeting, as requested by the council. Another SSA layer could be put in place for just the beautification. And the reason I bring that up is this one was created for parking, creation, and maintenance, and the yeoman share of the funds are going to maintain the streetscape and the snow. We could transfer all the beautification costs back into the general fund and just more accurately reflect what we're spending, but it's going to increase those funds. We could get into bonding and try to bond ahead to pay for some of the parking lot maintenance we know is coming up through the refinance we mentioned. And so that's...
The balloon payment is something that would be eligible for refinancing, I presume, would it not? Or for more financing, not refinancing, but...
Which bank it's at right now, we checked with refinancing through that finance establishment, and they were the ones that said no.
But when we have to make the payment, we could finance it elsewhere.
We could possibly finance it elsewhere. We've been talking about actually financing it ourselves, which is an option to do.
Thank you.
Because we're not at our maximum bond limit as a municipality. So if the council is able to just give some insights and your thoughts on these options, I'd appreciate it. And with me is everyone else who's worked on the budget. Eric and Pam and Dan and Paul are all here, and Mary. Okay.
Open discussion. Anyone wishing to comment on or perhaps offer suggestions on what direction to take?
I have a question about the public lots filled with daytime employees. Which ones are those? Because I know the courthouse lot is not filled with employees like it was intended to be.
Well, recently we've gotten some complaints. Some of our business owners are parking in front of their neighbors' businesses. And Paul even went to them and said, can you park in the courthouse lot? And
it's filled by night. I mean, it's filled with court parking.
Since the new courts were transferred back. Okay, the Northwest 20 spaces are supposed to be public and not filled by court people.
But the people who come to court are public, so...
Right,
I'm just pointing that out because I know from experience by 10 o'clock that lot is gone and not by employees.
Eric, you've monitored some of this. I think the St. Mark's lot is one of them.
Right.
Block 50. The block 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The lot behind the post office has
block
some
50.
That has some spaces which are assigned to businesses.
West of the
and that was part of the original deal of making that parking lot, that some of those spots are not public.
Yeah, there's four lots there all in all. The city owns two that were donated by the Kacharis family for public parking. And we've been, Attorney Radovich has been trying to renegotiate the leases with the other two, and they haven't wanted to do that with us. And so we're about to the point where we're going to have to just say we're not taking care of your lots anymore if you don't want to share them as public spaces.
As a matter of history, one of the reasons we went to three-hour parking as opposed to four was to discourage the employees from parking in front of their businesses on the assumption that they work a four-hour morning and a four-hour afternoon, but it only partially worked. That those complaints have been, as long as I've been on the council, complaints about people parking in front of their neighbor's business. So that was one of the many arguments between two, three, and four-hour parking downtown. It goes back a long way.
I will say that having a parking problem is a good thing. We're healthy downtown. Too many towns have torn down their buildings to create parking lots, and there was no reason left to come downtown because the buildings were all gone. So it's a healthy problem.
What about the lot behind the History Center? Is that still going ahead this year? It's in the general fund?
Dan is finishing up agreements with all the property owners. We had hoped to have each of the property owners that fronted Third work with us and merge their back of their parcels into a main city lot. We would have gotten 62 spaces altogether, and only the History Center has said they wish to do this with us, so we're getting 42 spaces.
In the 30s.
But it was a stop and a go to get all these negotiations. He had to talk to every property owner on the block.
But that's to go ahead this year?
It is. Yeah, we are budgeting for it.
Not in SSA?
Correct. That's where it's at right now.
But that will be carried over into the new fiscal year because we likely won't be finished with it before April 30th.
But we're probably going to have to put it in the general fund again because it's about $300,000.
It's in the capital fund, which is separate from the general fund.
Thank you. I misspoke. Thank you. She's my number guru.
I'm interested in the contribution to the SSA in comparison to the area that is serviced by our Department of Public Works in the snow plowing. Does that extend primarily from Anderson Boulevard only to North Bennett Street, with a few blocks north and south, or do we go beyond, further east to East State Street, or what, how do we do that?
I did not have the latest map, Sam, but I do have, I pulled that in here. Let me see if I can find it.
Well, what concerns me is if we're plowing for the business district east of North Bennett Street and they're not contributing to the SSA. Not contributing to the payment of that service.
This is sidewalks plowing we're talking about. Street plowing does not come under this, correct?
Correct.
The only plowing that comes into SSA is the sidewalk plowing down there.
Okay.
And I don't think they plow up the sidewalks.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Clarifies my question.
I don't know. You know what I didn't? Yeah, I didn't pull it in. I thought
maybe the city parking bullets.
Well, that's just the lots themselves. Oh. I thought I pulled it in. I apologize. I didn't.
Sorry, it's this sidewalks plus the parking lots is the plowing, right? That's assigned to SSA.
Let me ask a general question. Is there any interest in recalibrating SSA number one to make it more, or to achieve greater equilibrium? Or is there general comfort in leaving it as it is?
I'm not sure what you mean, Mayor. Enlarging it, or?
Well, no, we've adjusted the numbers to better reflect, and quite frankly, to ask our business owners to contribute a little bit more in terms of the services we provide. That's still not, I mean, is that the direction we want to take, what we currently have, or do we want to actually implement a policy that requests the business owners to even more, 100%. I'm just throwing it out there just to kind of spur discussion. If you recall, last time we had the discussion, and the majority of the opinions were, to Mr. Brown's point, it benefits the entire community, therefore we should be contributing something from the general fund. Whereas some people said, if the direction of the council is that we are going to eliminate services unless we pay for it, I'm willing to pay for it. But that didn't go anywhere. You know, that went over like a pregnant pole vaulter. So.
One of the pros of doing it through an SSA is it's more efficient. If each business were to pay for snow removal on their own, obviously they can't get it as cheap as they get paying into the SSA.
Right.
And I will say we've changed our snow policy in the last year, and we wait till 2 inches before we go out. I did see more shop owners shoveling this last snow event, I think, than ever before. It was kind of neat. I went around and took pictures of them, put them on Facebook. I thought it was a good thing.
But I think the question is, year over year, how do you know how much you're taking from the general fund to subsidize the SSA? So maybe we could discuss capping it at some maximum, or I understand why you use the SSA to do things. I get that. But how do I know? I mean, I can determine from the levy how much tax is going to come in directly as a result of the SSA. Mm-hmm. And then year over year, I'm transferring a variable amount from the general fund to make up the difference.
That's what we've been doing. The alternate, too, is the business district with the sales tax levy, and our sales tax is less than all of the surrounding and competing business districts. And since we brought that to you in October, I have had many people say they don't think people would feel a slight increase in the sales tax. As part of our, if we reestablish the business district, we would have to go through the process similar to a TIF, where you have to quantify five factors. You have to identify the existence of light.
Was that with the gentleman that came here the other day?
Yeah.
Was that
okay? Yeah, and then you can implement a sales tax in quarter percent increments up to 1%, but it's not levied against food and beverage.
But would it be just for the SSA 1?
Correct.
It would just be for this district?
Well, it would be for the business district. Probably would not be the same as the SSA. It could be wherever geographically we qualified. And the main factor we think we qualify on is the fact that only a third of our buildings downtown have fire suppression or sprinkler systems, fire alarms or sprinkler systems. So that's a concern for public safety. And that would qualify.
So that this is the map for the SSA.
Right.
The business district probably would not mirror the SSA boundary exactly.
It could mirror all the, we could take it all the way up to East State if we wanted, because there's a lot of properties there that have problems. If they qualified, we could take it that far. We could do just the historic district if we wanted. It depends on what properties qualify on the five factors.
And what the council wants to do.
Correct.
So we would, in essence, have a different sales tax rate for downtown than we did out on
Meadow Road?
That's
what I was going to ask.
Yes, you would.
Okay.
It's policy consideration.
It's an overlay district is all it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's happened, if you look at this table, it's quite clear.
There would be back to that table, Ellen, with the EAV.
Yeah. Chuck?
Well, yeah, the EAV is.
I mean, back in around 2000, the general fund was paying 2-1. Mm-hmm. And that's slowly decreased over the years. And in the last couple of the years, the real estate tax has raised more than the general fund. So the percentage paid by the general fund has fallen from between 70-80% to less than 50%.
Until this year.
And, you know, this was the origin, and this is because of the adjustments we made to the tax rate. The expenditures on this district have climbed a lot, much faster than inflation. So we're doing more for the downtown than we did back in the year 2000, for sure.
Yeah.
We've added the snow plowing. We have more parking lots, too, and they're coming due for resurfacing. So we're doing more, but it's also true that that the general fund is now, so far, we're now in a situation where the general fund is providing less than half of it.
And if I could, Alderman, in 2008-09, that was the first year we dissected it and really recognized how much was being spent. And that includes numbers that weren't coded to the SSA. They were coded to, like, the Public Works Streets Division budgets. So to say that it was a one-on-one ratio probably isn't really correct. I can only tell you from 2009-10 that $320,000 is the real number. And then it was the doubling of the rate that allowed the ratio to start to change.
Could you, Ellen, give us some information as to what savings there will be for each option?
We haven't gotten that far. We just thought we wanted to hear where you wanted us to look.
I'm not quite sure. Implementing leasing fees for public lots filled by daytime employees, and those would be leased by business owners?
And I will say that can be a real pain to administer. When I worked for Libertyville in their downtown district, it was rough.
So that's kind of an option.
Get a certain number of tags, and in Mount Prospect we gave out tags, and it's a hard thing to implement. It's almost harder sometimes than the revenue it's worth. That's just my personal editorial.
That was what the city stickers ended up to be here, is they said they threw it out because the administration was so
difficult. I just noticed the chief with the tear going up in his eyes about that whole tag program.
You can go further, and you can rent individual spaces where the person can actually put their name on the space. That's probably...
That could be almost a buy.
I don't know if that's the most efficient way, though, because then what if they're not there, no one else can park there?
Right.
I understand. So,
well, they do that at the Commons.
Really?
That you can get your own space.
The businesses have their spaces marked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who's paying who or how it's being determined out there, but there are some jewelers, I mean, there's some businesses, and for one that just comes to my mind, the jeweler.
Right up front where the parking is so tight on Randall, that outbuilding.
Is there a piece of jewelry that the show is still?
No. I don't shop there. I just go to the corner bakery.
I have seen communities do it in their parking decks. Displays in Naperville, for example, they've got certain reserved spaces.
Arlington Heights does as well.
Yeah.
Well, I don't recommend it for downtown. I believe, as you say, that having open parking spots is what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a park, as Alderman Dakota always pointed out. If all the spots are full, we don't have a parking problem. If there's some empty spots, we have a parking problem.
Could I ask a question about the business districts? It says reestablished. I thought we have a business.
It expires in 2013.
Okay, so we...
It was adopted with a 20-year sunset.
Right, so when we were talking earlier about it, it would not necessarily exactly mirror what we have downtown. Do we let it expire and draw a new one?
Yeah, because when ours was created, the sales tax was on an option that was implemented by the state in 95. It has to be, you have to go through the whole process, the whole due process components again, with public meetings and noticing.
Okay, so where did we leave that?
The EDC is going to look at it next week and make recommendation.
I was paying attention, honestly.
Okay. So.
Can I ask, all the other budgets are streamlined. Would you say the SSA has streamlined? You know, like you said, the snow is not plowed as immediately. I mean, are there things we can do? Like, I think some of these services we just have to keep in place, but I think it should mirror what everyone else's budget has to do, too.
Well, the other thing that hit this one is the 15% decrease in the levy, which was totally unexpected.
Right.
So.
But, I mean, we can do the same thing, less flowers, less snow plowing, still maintain the services, but do more with us, just like all the other budgets, right?
I'll turn over to Dan, since the bulk of the services come from his area.
Certainly snow has helped us a little bit this year.
We're way under on budget this year, which has been a good thing.
For a while. Ellen, I have one more question.
Yeah. I'll stay
probably
up here.
Best directed to you. And
that is, we have been talking about cutting expenses, where to raise revenues from taxes. Could you touch on what a new business like Fona or a smaller business means to Geneva? And you know, that's obviously a big part of our revenue, too.
Well, industrial tax base. You know what? I don't know if I carried that up here with me. I actually, as part of... it's funny, it's sitting on the top of my desk. As part of the Southeast Master Plan, we did a full spreadsheet. Paul, again, and with Malik, our interns, help. We have 189 acres in the business park, and I have a spreadsheet that I can share with you that answers that. I can't do it off the top of my head right now. But
it's
in terms
a lot.
Of property tax.
It's a lot.
Yeah, well,
it's helped.
It helps a lot, yes. Yeah, I can get that for you later. Okay. If you want, I'll run downstairs. It's up to you.
Can you share with Don just the raw percentages, though, that you tend to speak to quite a bit in terms of industrial versus residential, which is a...
Yeah, the main theory comes from Urban Land Institute, which is a national think tank, and the fact is for every dollar of property tax paid by a house, it costs more than a dollar to service it. Sewer, water, roads, police, fire. For every dollar paid by a commercial property, it costs less than a dollar. So they recommend you try to strive for 65% EAV of residential and the other 35 non-residential. As a whole, the state of Illinois is at 50-50.
Where's Geneva?
We're at 74% residential. So, yeah. Our industrial is about 10%. So if we could start to double our industrial base, we'll start getting closer to where we should be. So,
Don, if you and the family could move into Fona, that'd be helpful. Mm-hmm.
I think the question I was asked was, what can we
modified to still maintain services but save?
I can't really remember.
Save on it?
Exactly.
As far as like snow operations, for instance, an example would be this weekend. We had roughly an inch Saturday morning early, and then we had a quarter inch or so Sunday. We kind of look at those situations and try to decide what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, being an inch, we did bring out the crew to salt. In the downtown area. Sunday we did not. If it's an inch, you don't know until the event's over, but those are things that you could say. Ellen had talked about the 2 inches. Do we strictly go by 2 inches and say once it gets to 2 inches we call out the crews? How's the public, how are the businesses going to react to something like that? Those are the type of decisions that could be made that would still maintain the service. It just wouldn't be what we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Same, you could carry that on to the roads and everything else. I mean, safety is number one, but at some point, vehicles can drive in some snow as well. Secondary streets, cul-de-sacs, we've had that discussion before as well. So, I mean, those are some of the decisions that we can make to lower our costs, but at the same time, you got to know the consequences or the complaints that we're likely to hear. Because as snow being an example over the last several years, Mary talked about, we've reduced services in that regard to save money. Salt, for instance. We talked a little bit at our budget today. Many of you may remember several years ago there was a salt shortage and prices skyrocketed twice what we currently pay. We conserved on our salt that year, and we've been conserving ever since. We don't salt every street all the time. Secondaries, we don't salt. We save that for like intersection stops and that type of thing. So that's one way that we've been able to save, not only for cost, but I think in the long run, environmental impacts. All that salt gets washed into the rivers, into the river and that, and down the road, there's more and more push to minimize how much we're putting into the river. So I could see the EPA coming up with regulations of coming up with other options.
Are there other options? Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
There are other options. They are much more costly. Beet juice is an option that's out there, but it is a lot more costly than salt. We may be pushed to that at some point, and we'll have to figure out how we're going to afford that change. That will likely come in the future. So it's things like that that there's decisions that can be made.
Well, can I ask another question? And knowing that I would never want us to make a policy that makes it more work but less work, but could something, I know you have the parameters in the snow and ice, like what you did this week, and if it's an inch, yes, but could there be a different parameter for Sundays? Because, you know, not as many businesses are willing to adopt the customer-friendly hours, so do we really need to keep the sidewalks as fast and clean?
We do look at that, especially time of year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's during the holiday season, we pretty much are out there to try to keep things clear. After the holiday season, we don't call them out as much depending on the event. Sundays, yeah, because we're paying double time.
Mm-hmm.
When those guys have to go out for that, so we try to.
100 businesses open.
No, I realize that, but that's also, you know, we're always saying, how about uniformity in hours and customer service, customer friendly, and to me that's an enticement, you know, that we can't continue to give the excellent services when 50% of the businesses are closed on that one day or Mondays or something.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask about landscaping? Obviously, there's some trees that need to be replaced on 3rd Street every once in a while. We have a 50-50 policy with residents. Do we have a 50-50 policy with businesses on replacing trees yet?
That's a good question. We've been asking the same question.
I think the answer is no, yeah, right.
The way we've been handling it is with how much effort the city has put into the streetscape in the downtown area, As of right now, we've been looking at replacing that as part of our tree replacement program. However, that is a perfect example. We could charge businesses, if they would like their trees replaced
immediately,
$150 per tree.
Clearly, part of the streetscape is the trees, so right. If we want to keep downtown looking good, we have to replace the trees. The other thing is, I noticed your crew out there working with the bricks. The bricks are nice, but it appears there's a little bit more maintenance with the bricks than there is with a regular road.
There definitely is.
And do we charge that to SSA number one, or?
Yes.
Well, you could be an argument there that that's for the whole city, not just the businesses.
The streetscape crew that we have does the maintenance typically on that, unless it gets this past year, the brick ribbon behind the back of curb, that was too big for our guys to be able to handle, so we did contract that out. We do have a budget in our capital improvement program where we do budget some of those more significant improvements. If we have to do an entire intersection, you'll notice some of those bricks continue to settle out. We have to reset a larger section. Our crews really aren't geared up for something like that. So some of that stuff does come.
Again, that's a policy question. Is the streetscape something which really benefits the whole city or just the businesses on 3rd Street? I would argue that at least 50-50 it benefits the whole city, probably more than that.
Another option there would be stamped concrete, and it was chosen specifically to go to the brick for the look, just to comment.
Yeah, well, no, the decision was made by a council many years ago, but, you know, people like it.
There's pros and cons.
It's interesting and different, and I think we should support it. But the question is, who supports it, all of Geneva or the businesses? And that's the argument, again, the policy decision between how much percentage of this goes to the businesses and what percentage goes to the public at large. And, you know, it's flipped past 50% now. So, you know, that was a policy decision made in 2009, which I argued against. But I'm not sure we want to go much past 50%. To me, it makes no sense.
Capped out our levy there, correct? For the SSA. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what's the possibility of changing that levy rate? Just for a question, or is that, how is that done, if it has to be?
Home rule?
No. You would need to notice all of the property owners, and you would have to put the question out there, and 51% could defeat the question.
Is it 51% or 50%
plus one? 50%
plus one. Plus one person?
More than 50%.
Yeah.
That's why I said 51. Okay, sorry.
50.01 was still.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's got
one
it.
One of those technicalities.
Got it.
Too.
Barry, you need your mic. I'm sorry.
Anyway, for God's sake, use your mic.
There really are three sources of budget for the SSA 1, and that is the SSA levy, the transfer from the general fund, and you'll see this current year, $90,000, we transferred from the general fund. And then we also use some of our infrastructure, our sales tax referendum money, that infrastructure restricted sales tax money. That also gets used for...
Is that what you call other revenue?
Projects. Could be, yes. Could come from there as well, yeah.
Or
general capital.
And other revenue at times have been the parking fees,
right.
The $4,500 per space, and we haven't had any of those in several years. So
the other revenue is different things in different years.
Yeah, right. Well, I see it here, so 40, it doesn't specify
46 was
what it
a transfer
is.
This year.
It just says varies by year, including bond issue, and interest, transfer to reserves to buy, blah, 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 rental.
Different combinations.
Yeah.
And you can... if you wish, contribute, assign that contribution to the general public.
Well, and for those of you that wondered why I was out snapping snowplow pictures and putting them on Facebook, I was asking the general public to come on downtown. Public Works was keeping it open for them. So it was a cry to the shoppers. We got a lot of nice comments about how well a job, what a good job Public Works had done. It was kind of neat. Are we done with this? Should we move it down?
Ellen, I guess...
going back to one of the mayor's first comments, I mean, when we've looked at this SSA before, the businesses truly did not want to see any services cut. If you do go for the SSA levy increase, is that done by the property owners or by the businesses?
It's property owners.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it could be, I mean, you could be looking at changing the SSA, the levy of the SSA. You could also be looking at a business district as well.
But realistically speaking, a business district overlay is at least a six-month process.
Right.
At least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes we'll go to a separate SSA, like St. Charles has a 90-cent levy and a 30-cent levy.
It's a dollar for different purposes.
What
is that?
One was for parking creation, and then one was for the downtown Merchant Association, the partnership program.
So you could do a separate one for beautification and upkeep?
Or for whatever you wanted to, as long as the property owners were in agreement with you, yeah.
The way we finessed the one for beautification is we allowed, when we renewed the special service area, we allowed the 10% for non-parking.
Right.
It was originally parking only, this SSA.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was renewed in 99?
88, and then
97.
Yeah. No, Chuck, and then in 99, when you chaired the committee, we put in the 10%. I remember.
Yeah, but then it was reduced to up to 20%, and that was on the third renewal, I believe.
Right.
But, so we finessed the question of putting in the beautification in with the parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
By allowing the fund to also fund beautification.
But isn't the beautification really just 3rd Street?
Parking lots, too.
Yeah, parking lots, though, throughout, along State and on Hamilton, those lots as well. I know that your group
handles
the plantings, yeah, but the seal coating and stuff of Hamilton lots.
Yeah, right.
It all happens.
And the planters down on 31?
Some of them are ours.
This is a map of all the lots that we own that are down there.
Those are actual size, right?
Yes,
I'm lighting up the crowd, for God's sake.
Does the SSA include those orange ones at the train station?
No,
I didn't think so.
Dawn?
Oh, thank you. And I was just going to clarify a little because the from my understanding and talking to different people, the downtown merchants do not want to see services eliminated or cut, services such as the snow plowing. But I think there's a lot of things that are not direct. They don't have an impact on sales, like we could do less beautification or less. I think there's certain things that we could stretch out or slightly eliminate that would not impact the actual shopper's experience. I mean, the snow plowing, from the people that I've talked to, the problem is it has to be done by the city because when it was individual businesses, not everyone would do it. So people would be walking and then just get off the street. So that's something that is for the good of all. But there's certain other things I don't think have an impact. I don't believe that they would mind if they were stretched out or eliminated, like some of the beautification efforts.
If I can ask, what's the percentage of merchants that own the properties? Because we're talking about property owners who get taxed the SSA, right? But it's not the merchants who get taxed, correct?
Well, I'm only assuming it's going to pass
through. It passed through? Okay.
I would say the majority are renters. This is the art of downtown management because the property owner wants higher rent and the business owner wants lesser rent, and you're always juggling.
Yeah.
I mean, is it safe to assume? Mm-hmm. Mr. Brown stated pretty clear that he thinks the balance is appropriate. Is that in the spirit of giving direction to Ellen while she continues to crunch numbers?
The balance varies year to year, but I'm saying as policy, the city council should say that something in the range of 50-50 is reasonable. And as I say, the other revenue is an interesting case because if those revenues weren't given to SSA 1, they would presumably be available for other things that benefit the general population. So,
well, they're also reappropriation out of the fund balance as well.
So, you know, it's always a slightly foggy number, but you're moving from an era a decade ago when it was 2-to-1 general fund to SSA to an era now where it's where it's averaged closer to 1-to-1, and is that the policy of the council, that it should be somewhere in the neighborhood of 50-50? It's certainly going to vary year to year because these numbers bounce all over the place. Was that how we stated it in 2009? Maybe Craig remembers because he was quite vocal in his arguments. Remember how the argument then was just to raise it to the maximum immediately because the SSA was so far behind.
But at the time we knew it was going to bring it to closer to a 1-to-1 on an overall basis going forward. I mean, I think that was part of the impetus that let the rate move up to the highest, was that we realized it was going to go to a 50-50 split.
But it wasn't officially adopted.
No, it was not officially adopted, right. But I think that was the underlying tone of the discussion at that time.
Alan, what would be the advantage of creating a business district? I know it'll take some time to do that, but would that be an advantage over the SSA, or that would be part of the SSA? I don't quite understand.
The challenge in the SSA being a property tax is that you've got the larger owners paying the lion's share of it, and that's the Dotsons and the Harrington and some of the larger Simon properties. The benefit of the business district is two. One, that it is the sales tax, so it is outsiders. You know, a great number of our shoppers are visitors and won't even notice it. But the other thing is you can use it for a different purpose. We could put it in place and use it possibly to help bring fire suppression systems. We could use it for a wider range. We could maybe even put something in there for marketing or public art. And that's the negotiation and the public consensus of putting something like that in place. What are our needs? It would be an addition, I believe. And then by 2023, this expires. So we have to decide what we do then in advance of it as well. And that might be something that is brought into the discussion. Typically, when a community will do a second SSA or do a business district, they will renegotiate the existing because everyone knows, okay, I'm going to get that if I give here. And it is really what's the consensus. You know, and it's a lot of discussion and a lot of visits and a lot of meetings. So it's a lot of time. But you're looking for an agreement, a win-win for the majority of the folk.
So by improving the fire protection, that's going to make more business space available on the second and third level of our taller buildings, perhaps?
You know, the chief is here. We're pretty fortunate that we have a very high level of second-story spaces already leased. But Mr. Sansoni, for example, has a lot of empty space. And his two buildings are a balloon construction. They were built in the 20s. It was the construction type at the time. Jump in any time, Chief. And if a fire would come up the wall, it would come across the ceiling, the whole building would be gone before they could even get there.
So that's like above Good Sense Children, right?
Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Sansoni doesn't have a lot of those spaces leased. Mm-hmm. That's why Good Sense has that display in the front window.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, it would open up some. I think more so it would... Our character is our architectural heritage, and we've got to protect. If we lose one block, you know, and some of those buildings are half a block or more, it'll dramatically change the face of the community. And so it's a proactive. It also would allow for businesses in the basement if the things were sprinkled. But then you've got a policy question. Okay, some of the building owners have bitten a bullet and put in their sprinklers, you know, so... We didn't help them. Are we going to help others? So there's your policy decision. Is it a 50-50 match, maybe? You know, in the late 80s, early 90s, St. Charles just buckled down and made everybody do it. We've really worked with people, and it's had to be an extreme change of use, and we've got this 3,000-square-foot threshold where we haven't required it and other towns might have. We really try to work with our property owners. So...
I would like to see us study that a little bit more and see what could be accomplished for the business district.
Anything else?
Chief, I don't want to risk your performance on Saturday Night at the Dance with the Stars by walking back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Fred,
what do you have to say?
Don't stand by.
Only if you did a rhythm.
Disgust on his face.
I think something you have to keep in mind, these businesses that we have in the downtown area, such as
imagine over Stockholm's is that line there. That's a single unit, that's a single building, and Ellen used the term balloon construction. That's the type of construction where the walls were put up in one piece, so there's an open channel that goes from the basement all the way to the attic. A fire that goes undetected in the basement. And if you were, any of you were here in town when there's a dime store that used to be in the middle of the
Kaiser's.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Kaiser's was exactly that issue. It started in the basement, got in the walls, and next it was in the attic, and that was into Kaiser's. And the other fact you have to keep in mind, too, is more than 50% of the businesses that burnt, that had a serious fire, do not reopen. So you're looking at a loss of revenue and a loss of historical character of the downtown area. So this is not an insignificant issue. I'm not saying that there's going to be a fire tomorrow, but if it goes undetected by the time it is found, it's because it's already burned outside of the building, and it's well seated, and it's harder for us to fight. So it can spread quickly. It can be not a good outcome. So that was one of the things we talked about, staff levels. How can we encourage the building owners to take this task on? And on the positive side for the business owners, it gives them more flexibility in what they can do with the property as new opportunities come available. Right now, a lot of times they say, we'd like to do this. Well, that means you get those breakers. Too expensive. We'll change it. Mm-hmm. So we've really, over years, tried to work with people. We've also, as Ellen mentioned, a good case in point would be Loral in Flagstone. They installed their system over, I think, a three-year period. 1 year, they brought the water in. Second year, they sprinkled the first floor. And the third year, they did the second floor. Geneva Hotel is another example. Mike Simon, who owns it, has brought the water in, and he's done a floor at a time. The fourth floor, I don't believe, is sprinkled at this time. Third floor, rather, excuse me. So we've tried to be flexible and work with them as opportunities have occurred. But there's just something to think about.
Cha-cha-cha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you pass the hat for your vote?
Yeah.
There you go.
Got vote cards, buddy?
The other thing is we had challenges downtown because of the electric utility. Some of the services are older, especially like we're being Trichet. It's a 110 service to the whole block. That would be something we could use these funds for to upgrade our utility, and that would enhance the type of businesses that could come into certain buildings.
Ellen, how much of the downtown of the sales taxes paid by residents and non-residents? Is that a percentage we roughly know or not?
You know, the Clues group did that marketing study in 2006, and they estimated that one-third is residents and two-third is visitors, roughly. I can't verify
that. No, that's okay. Just ballpark was
in the last
70%.
Yeah, in the last 4 years, we've done a lot to try and encourage more shopping locally. And I will say the merchants this year said they felt there was more of an intent to shop local and shop artisan. So that was good. Our merchants had a very good December. They were all very, very pleased. And we walked Paul and Malik and Jamie, went door-to-door in every business almost twice in the last 3 weeks.
A lot of that would have been local, I presume.
Yes, we gave
a big increase in December.
December was just a good holiday. Some of the businesses said it was the best December they've had since they opened, and some of them 8 years or more open. So I had one tell me they beat 07, which had been their highest year. Now, not everyone was that astounding, but it was a good year. So we won't have the sales tax numbers till March.
And to increase
shopping.
I don't
know if everyone was telling the truth.
Okay. To increase shopping locally, I think my personal opinion is no one should walk into a business and ask for a donation unless they shop there.
Mm-hmm.
Because people hit up every single business and then you say, oh, do you shop there? Oh, no. So I think that should just be a social rule.
Okay.
Peer pressure.
So, Mayor, the main direction I've heard is a policy of one-to-one. I don't know if there's anything else the council wants to...
I think that's what I'm hearing, too, in terms of crunching your numbers, bring back something that reflects that 50-50 ratio that Mr. Brown spoke
and
about.
And I guess that business district is probably something that we're all, at least I've seen some sense of, at least looking at it seriously.
And that's a guideline.
Obviously, of course.
Any given year can vary.
But the raw numbers will always fluctuate, but in terms of the...
The maintenance numbers vary.
If I could ask, there's one other thing I'd like to hear, though, and that would be the policy of trying to get all of the parking lot and the capital projects in this fund. You know, for example, the block, the notability lot is going to come out of the infrastructure fund.
That's the 139 annual appropriation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I know. I had to bring it up, though.
It's not going to happen.
So much for policy.
Well, how do you do that and
maintain
the
one-to-one
ratio?
Right, you don't.
Well, you start to code some of the labor expenses to the general fund and show the reality.
Which in turn means we, again,
which means we don't meet our 0% exactly. Guideline you've given us to work in. I just got to bring it up.
Right.
That's another way.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone needs to look at.
I'll shut this down. Okay.
So, yeah, thank you, Ellen.
Yeah.
My thanks to Paul for all his research.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Very much. We love your seafoam shirt.
Outstanding report.
It is. It's nice.
It is.
Hey, look at that, Van Gescombe. It's a good-looking shirt, man.
Okay. I'm going to shut the computer down there.
Yeah, shut the whole meeting down now that we're talking about shirt colors.
I like yours.
We do have other staff. I know that we had some questions that came up when we were talking about our public works staff. And perhaps, Dan, if you want to just touch on those. Again, we're looking for direction from the council. We've been working on the all of the budgets. Actually, we just finished today going through all of the departments and division operating and capital budgets. And several questions have arisen, and so that's why we wanted to bring these policy questions to you and just seek direction or input suggestions from you. And Dan has a few items that we talked about bringing up tonight, just to get your thoughts on them.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to list them out, and then I'll let you guys decide which ones you'd like to discuss, if any. I'll start out with our southeast development area that we're currently working in, the study area, which would be south of the tracks, east of Kirk Road. As Ellen discussed just earlier about our industrial tax base, that area is planned to be light industrial. The issue that we're running into is it has infrastructure improvements that will be necessary. With the railroad track being a barrier, it's likely that development will occur from Fabian and head north. Unfortunately, our utilities are to the north or to the west. So to be able to make that ready, a developer has significant infrastructure improvements to be able to, you know, develop that property. We've got sanitary sewer along the south side of the tracks, water main at 38, electric at Kirk. So in order to get down to, let's say, Louis Bourque Drive in Batavia, if you envision a road directly north of that, heading north into that farmland, you've got to get utilities there.
We have utilities as far as the Comfort Inn, though, right?
Yes, but they're not adequate to be able to serve.
Comfort Inn, what is it?
It's a Comfort Inn.
Okay. But they're not adequate to extend further east.
Correct. So there's significant improvements that are necessary in order to make that land developable. One of the questions we've been discussing as we get into the budgets, should the city look at making, and these are off-site improvements, electric. We need to come from essentially the Geneva Generation Facility and head south. We need to come from the line that runs along Fabian and continue east. Water main needs to extend from 38 south. All those things need to happen. Should the city start looking at investing capital improvement funds in the different electric, water, general fund to support that southeast development? We actually just today received a preliminary estimate from our consultant working on that study, and a developer coming in that area to develop the entire thing, the entire area that we talked about, it's in excess of $20 million. That's a lot of money. And what developers we have come in looking at that, that's their biggest issue, is it's going to cost me to build the roads, get the electric there, get the water there, the sewer. They've got millions of dollars of infrastructure, and that's not even getting their site ready for a building. Should the city start looking at that or not? We learned recently that the Tech Park to the east, DuPage Tech Park, I believe the airport authority is currently going through the process of opening that up to more of just a business park. Before it was only leases were allowed. Now they're looking at the potential to be able to sell off lots. So we have that competition. It's already got roads, water, sewer, electric, everything's ready to go. So that's going to be a challenge that we have if we're going to require a developer to make all those off-site improvements plus the on-site improvements when the development to the east is ready to go.
Excuse me, Dan. I saw that article in the newspaper about the airport authority. And knowing what the airport authority has spent on things like golf courses and now this other project they're going to help develop, make it available to business development, very low cost compared to what it would cost for a developer to come in and spend $20 million or so to do our southeast. I think that puts us right behind the eight ball. And it just bothers me to spend much money at all in doing anything anymore in the southeast development, as well as long as the airport authority in DuPage County is going to spend their tax dollars to benefit their own project for a less costly investment in the way of a business. So I was prepared to bring that subject up. I'm glad you did.
Okay.
Danny, if I may?
Oh, of course.
The present economy, how would we expect to invest $20 million in a project such as that, and think about how we're going to get and recapture that, and how long would it take us to do so?
I'm not suggesting that we would spend $20 million. I'm suggesting that over time, years, we could build little pieces that would help get those utilities closer so that when, if a developer is ready to come, he's got a little less infrastructure to build. Recapture could be part of all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decision that you guys would have to make, is do we recapture that? You know, we're looking at the possibility of TIF in that area and whether that's feasible or not. That would also help fund some of these improvements. So, go ahead.
The current industrial park, how many spaces do we still have available there? How many, if we're looking to redevelop an area, how much do we already have the infrastructure in the industrial area, right?
Right? There's some space along Dearborn Court by the Northern Illinois Food Bank. Continental Envelope has a lot to the west of theirs. And then over Fono's got a lot.
Yeah. Continental Envelope owns 11 acres, but they're farming it right now. Dearborn Court was platted for four buildings, and we may see a sale of the remainder of the parcel, but there's no known user yet. Fona does own parcels on either side. They've bought two projects before us. They stop and they start. And then there's 20 acres on Route 38, the Couts-Peterson farm to the west of Bill Couts, who had the BMW. And it's zoned B4, but we really believe, and we've been telling people it should be industrial. Now that we see the layout of the road, they won't have the frontage for retail. So that's it. Yeah.
Along the lines Dorothy brought up, when we enhanced our electric substation in the industrial park,
right?
I just simply don't recall. Was that wasn't through a recapture process, was it, or was it? That was simply an investment the city made in order to spur and continue to provide service to a growing industrial park.
I believe when that business park was developed, there were funds that the city utilized to spark it.
But there was some recapture.
There was some.
There were, yeah.
But I don't know
it's
if
a mixture,
it was
I think.
100%.
Yeah. And we also got some economic development grants through the state.
When you talk about electric utilities being extended southward, are you talking simply 34K or 138?
138.
Either or.
Mike Buffington's here. We can serve a certain volume of electric south of 38, but it's very minimal. We're about 80 MW for the whole city, and we can serve what south of 30? Is it 11? About 11, and then we need another substation. And it's about $3 million for the substation and another $3 million to connect to the other substations. You have to have that redundancy and feed, or you're a big extension cord.
I just think the enthusiasm of Mr. Buffington is overwhelming, and I just want to thank him for the presentation.
He answered the question.
Yes, he did.
No, I think Alderman Hill put it exactly on correctly. At the moment, we cannot compete with DuPage Airport Authority, period. They have deep pockets over there. They have the whole county contributing to that tax rate. And at the moment, with the market and everything, so I think this is a project that has to be put on hold, even long-range preparations, because with the properties we still have left in our industrial park, with the properties that they're willing to give away, literally at 50 cents on the dollar, because that thing fell through as soon as Mr. Hastert was no longer their fairy godfather over there. That project really fell flat on its face. And so I don't think there's a chance we're going to be competing with that in the near term, and hence I don't think it would be a good investment at this point. It'd be a long time before we get any recapture, is my guess.
Yeah.
So I think for this year especially, it would have to be put on hold, is my guess.
Are there more projects? Or?
Yeah, well, I'll defer to the committee. Do you want to continue to discuss this?
Can I just
have $20 million come from the SSA number one?
Yeah. The only advantage we have is the electric rates. And the last four projects that looked at the Tech Park, one of them came to Geneva, Roquette, and the other three went to Batavia, and it was because of the electric rates. So if it's a large power user, there is a differential there.
That's when the big transformer comes into play. Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's true.
But I don't know how you could fund that in addition to funding the Prairie State project through the electric company to build substations.
Right. There's definitely, there's costs. You'd be looking at bonding,
right,
or some type like that. That's the feedback that we're looking for. Should we be spending time or putting these numbers into our budgets or not? That's the feedback that we're looking for. I can move on to the next item. We already talked about snow plowing and some options there about trying to save some money there. Outsourcing cemetery landscape and cemetery services. I think we had a policy discussion item on the cemetery and the issues associated with it. We did receive, when we went out to bid for the landscape, our general landscape maintenance, we also received bids on the landscape maintenance for the cemetery and cemetery services. I think we can save money if we were to outsource and move. Well, save money for the cemetery, but maybe increase the general fund if we were to move the position into the street division. Because if you outsource landscape maintenance at the cemetery, your position that currently exists there would become more of an oversight of the contractors involved with doing the work. So it'd be more of a part-time position. So that's an item. I think we've had the struggles of being able to maintain services with summer help and the one employee that we have, because summer help tends to be there not the entire growing season. So we have to supplement that with street crews to be able to keep up, or we don't keep up, as Alderman Hill knows. With contracting it out, that issue, I think, goes away, because you have a contractor that has the resources and the requirement to maintain that on a weekly basis.
you know, the section there, what would that, how would that play out?
Yep. That's where I was saying that that position could be moved into the street division.
Okay.
And at that, you know, the city would have to look at the funding as far as whether that could be absorbed by the general fund or not.
I see.
The moment part of the sexton's salary comes out of the cemetery funds, correct?
75% is cemetery, 25% is street.
Yeah.
It would probably be more of a reversal.
And that would hurt
25 to 75.
And that would hurt the general fund.
Right.
Yes.
So we'd have to look at the finances on whether that could be accomplished.
If we filled it. And how did you play into the part-time position?
The summer help would be eliminated.
Oh.
Because we wouldn't need summer help. Basically, we're mowing the lawn and weed whipping, and that we wouldn't need that because we'd have a contractor doing that work.
Dan, would we need to flip that position into the streets or the?
That's what we're evaluating right now, and whether that position would be maintained or not.
Okay.
Refuse. We're looking at a rate increase on refuse. We've got brush and leaf contracts that we're in the middle of. They have built-in increases along the way, and we're getting to a point where it's likely that we would need a rate increase to be able to maintain that the general fund is not contributing towards that.
Dan, can you clarify that? The rate increase is part of the contract we have in place.
Right.
Are you suggesting...
Multi-year contract.
Okay. But again, it's contractual.
Right.
So the rate increase is no surprise to the council, but are you referring to something above and beyond that rate increase?
No.
Okay, got it.
We just need to cover the rate increases for both the brush and the leaf programs.
Okay. Thank you.
One issue that has... that we've been dealing with on the refuse fee. The refuse fee is not applied to all properties. However, there are properties that receive the benefit and do not pay the fee, and there's properties that pay the fee and do not receive the benefit. One way to clean that up would be to say all properties within the city of Geneva are going to pay the refuse fee, because everybody, one way or another, benefits from having the leaves and the brush throughout the community cleaned up. That would include the businesses who currently put their leaves and brush out are not paying that fee.
Can you give us an example of someone who's paying for it, not receiving it, or vice versa?
Sure.
Is it a townhouse association?
Exactly.
Pays for it, doesn't get it, and how do
they're
you...
They're residential. It's mainly tied, and it varies, but it's mainly tied to residential properties that pay it. But what we're finding is the townhouse, some townhouses are paying it, and then the next-door neighbor isn't paying it. So it doesn't make sense, and it needs to be cleaned up one way or another. You know, we're trying to find out what your preference would be, just the residential single-family home or all properties within.
All properties.
But that, if we worded one thing to consider, if we apply it across the board to all properties, that would actually, in effect, reduce the fee to the residents or the current, because you're spreading that across more properties. So the rate would actually go down because it's being spread across everybody.
I think we just put our new software handle.
That's one of the issues of why we haven't been able to deal with it, because the current software doesn't allow us.
We have this paradigm of one property, one house. As soon as you get into businesses and apartments and condominiums, it becomes very complicated how many ratepayers there are on how many pieces of property. Because the utility, lots of businesses have more than one utility bill. Lots of apartments have many residents and only one bill, and it can become
the new software.
The new software would have to be very complicated to handle that situation.
The new software is much more able to handle that than the current software.
Smarter.
And it's all a matter of how we set it up, and we're just now getting ready to start that process. So if we know what direction we're going, then we can make sure to set it up that way.
If your recommendation is that we think about going that direction, obviously we're going to say you're going to have to do a little more work, because this is going to be a complicated ordinance, is my guess, because of this. There is no one-to-one match. Once you get away from single-family properties, there's no one-to-one match between utility bills and property owners and residents and whatever. I've seen the utility list, and it's very complicated.
There's lots of residents that have more than one.
It would simply be just a refuse fee. I mean, I live in a condo, so I would, you know, I currently pay the fee, but technically don't receive the benefit. The converse of that is, are we, in a sense, allowing HOAs or condos to, I don't know how to describe this, literally they'll take all the leaves they collect behind my joint and dump it on 8th Street, correct? Or would you actually bring trucks in and I'd have to rake around and bring it into the parking lot?
Well, that needs to be determined. Right now, Kramer, who does the service, does not go into those areas.
Right, okay, got it.
Mainly because a lot of those areas are too tight for their equipment to get in there. So that would likely remain.
Okay.
That we would not be able to get into those areas. But all the streets that they are able to get to, that service would remain. But people that are receiving it without paying would be paying, and then we'd still have the issue of people that are not receiving the service paying.
Well, their landscape company would have to haul the material out in order to get it collected, pure and simple.
Right.
Have you had complaints about that?
I have.
Yes.
I live.
Really?
We get calls.
It's a very exclusive community, sir.
Yeah. It's gated.
Again, it gets complicated.
And yet it's still
back here. The gates ought to be locked for 24 hours.
Just jump on the golf course and call it good.
When you get to businesses on Thursday, businesses downtown, some actually have trees and leaves, some do not. And it becomes very...
It's the same with any...
Many properties that have more than one business and more than one utility bill on the same property.
But it's the same thing as those people who like the mayor, you know, he doesn't have any trees, but yet he leaves, and so he still has to pay for it, and there are people who...
We don't care what happens to the mayor. We're talking about business.
I just use it as an example.
Yes, it is.
I feel like it's SSA. I don't think a person could opt out, like, oh, I'll just do my own leaves, but
right.
I find it hard to leverage it for somebody that is paying the private services to do it.
But what about the argument, to borrow Mr. Brown's philosophy, is it or is it not a community-wide benefit?
Right. Similar discussion on the downtown, SSA.
Yeah. We pay for our leaf disposal, though.
That's the policy question. Presumably you should figure out the details somehow, but...
About the living units on Campbell Street and on both sides of Campbell Street. I know that one on the east side of Campbell Street, they have their own landscape service, and they do their own raking and leaf pickup. Do they pay a fee now? Do you have any idea?
I haven't looked at that one, but I know, like, on the 8th Street in that area, there are people that are paying it and there are people that aren't. And that's what I'm saying is, whichever way we go, we need to clean it up and make it consistent so it's the same across throughout the city.
Sure. But if they're having it taken care of, I don't know if the Campbell Street living units are taken care of as yours are or not. I know that the Mews do their own, but that might be something of interest too. I would not be too interested in having any reduction of any of those fees, so no matter what we do.
Well, it'd be a natural reduction simply because we expanded the pool of those paying.
Right.
So the shock would come to those who have never paid.
Right.
Yeah.
And assume they have no benefit and say, what's this $4 charge?
Right. So, yeah. If they don't get any benefit, then they should.
Brush and leaves, basically.
Right.
There's also the administration of... it's relatively minor, but it's administration of the solid waste program. As a, you know, Allied Waste, and we put the contract out for that. That's actually going to be, we're going to be entering into our last year with Allied Waste. That ends in July of 2013.
Danny, are you in referencing to both brush pickup and leaf pickup here?
Correct. The refuse fee, which mainly consists of leaf and brush pickup.
Okay. Now, presently, we have a... I think I'm wondering if we don't need to reduce the amount of brush pickup in a sense of what we presently have and how it's done.
eliminating one or two of those pickups, reducing some of that cost. Have you looked at that issue possibility?
That was, when we put it out to bid the last time, that was discussed, what the frequency should be. And at that time, we basically maintained the service that we were doing. Now, that was discussed. Should we do it? We could look at, a few times a year. Mm-hmm. Twice a month, once a month, that type, that whole discussion. We're in a contract right now, so I think we still have two more years, I believe, on it. So in order to change it, you'd have to renegotiate with the current contract, but mm-hmm. in future contracts, yes, definitely we would likely discuss it again on whether we want to maintain it or not.
Not the leaf, but the brush.
Yeah, the brush.
Both.
Yeah. I don't know about the leaf. Yeah. They're concerned about the grass.
What is the current brush? Is it twice a month for 8 months?
Oh, no. It's more than that.
No, it's twice a month, I think.
Twice a month for 8 months, right?
Right.
April.
Oh, you're right. It is.
Yep.
And as our neighborhoods mature, what's going to increase? Our neighborhood is now about 25 years old, and we have people looking for rooms to be picked up already, but that's just a mistake. But it's people that are dependent upon that service.
But, that discussion is, do they need it every other week, or can they stack it and get rid of it once a week, or once a month?
Possibly.
You know?
Do we have consensus? I mean, what do you think, Chuck? You think we spread it out overall?
No, I would want to hear more. I think it's something that should be looked into.
Okay.
And do you want two sets of
figures? I don't think renegotiating current contracts makes sense.
No. I'm talking about just the refuse fee overall.
The refuse fee. I think we should, if there's something that can be done to clean it up with the new software, like at least having consistency over condos or something. But as a general policy, I'm not sure which side I come down on. I can understand businesses complaining bitterly when they have, their business fills the lot line to lot line.
That's the problem you run into, is there's some businesses that will benefit and others that won't. And that's the debate that we've had internally. I mean,
Stephen Street's a perfect example. For all practical purposes, isn't it?
Yes, I'd be interested in looking at some numbers.
Sure.
This is all conjecture here.
Right. Well, we can continue to work on that.
Well, let's see what the new system that information gives us, and we can make a more intelligent decision, perhaps.
Yeah, I think there's two parts. One is cleaning up the obvious discrepancies in the present one.
Oh, I have better facts.
Maybe the software can do, and the other one is expanding the program to cover more people.
Right.
And I think those are two separate questions, and you should answer the first one first, because that.
Part of it's how we set up the software, so we need some direction to know what our policy is in order to set up the software appropriately.
Well,
if we just carry over the way we've been carrying over, we'll still have the same problem that we have currently.
Right, sure. But as part of that carryover, maybe there's a chance that it can, at that point, it can be cleaned up, so we at least have some consistency.
Well, I think part of the reason, too, is because exceptions have been made to certain properties over the years because there hasn't been a policy in place. So for particular properties that either complained or requested that they not be charged, permission was given in years past to individual properties.
Codified, though.
You're absolutely correct.
So maybe we can think about just codifying that part of it.
But that's why we're looking for a policy direction.
If they somehow register with the city contract for a contractor to do that work, then they're exempt or something for condos or apartment complexes. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Please excuse me of practicing law. But maybe that sort of thing is the first step in cleaning up this ordinance. And the second step is the bigger policy question. Do we want to expand it to cover more?
What do you think, Dan?
What do you need, Dan?
I think we can work with that. We'll come back with numbers as far as looking at applied across the board versus
cleaning it up.
Trying to clean it up.
Okay. But those places who already have official permission to take care of their own refuse, leaves and rubbish, or branches, you might might want to consider, as long as those are legally recorded, that we might want to continue that. We may not. I don't know. But they're willing to do it on their own.
And that could change over time.
Sure. Right. Well, then we have to.
Because in place now doesn't mean there might be 10 years from now.
Right. Then we would have to include them in the program if they decide to abandon that type of an arrangement. Then we put them in our program and charge them.
You know, so you're looking at some kind of mechanism to exempt certain properties, but then again, looking at policy, if someone says, "I don't have a landscape contract, I don't want leaf pickup,"
because I don't have any.
You know,
they don't have any.
I mean, those are the kind of policy questions that we're looking to you to clarify to say, is that, could that be an exemption?
I would say it's you either have private leaf pickup or you pay.
Yes.
Right.
Well, we got
to accept again the question of businesses. I'm not about to tonight. That's complicated.
We want to make sure that we're not allowing that for all residents as well, because you'll have people that live in a new subdivision that doesn't generate brush or leaves
say
well, I don't
want to
pay for
trees.
It now. I'll pay for it 20 years from now when I have it. And now the burden really comes down on the ones that
Sam
own.
Pointed out, we have less and less new subdivision out there, more and more
right.
subdivisions.
I think we should just try to keep it as simple as possible.
Trees.
Right. Keep it for the simple so that the council understands it.
Thank you, Dave.
All right. Water main replacements and extensions that will assist with fire flow and water quality issues that we have in the city. One thing that we've talked about in our budgets is utilizing the sales tax referendum money, which is an infrastructure. It was created for infrastructure improvements, and those improvements can include water main installations. The fire department, over the years, they do fire flow tests to see how our system's doing, and they've got some spots throughout town that have less than adequate fire flow where they would want fire protection to be at. So as we do road improvements, we want to replace those water mains, increase the size of those water mains, or extend dead-end connections so that it's looped, which helps the pressures within that zone. So what we're looking at doing is utilizing those funds when we in our street program to make those water main improvements, and we want to make sure that you guys are okay with that.
Well, hasn't our policy all along been that when we redo a street, we look very carefully at all the underground utilities and take care of them then? Because
yes, we do.
Saves money in the long run, for sure.
The difference here is this money is coming out of what is the general fund versus the water fund. But this is making system improvements that benefits the residents in the area for fire protection, water quality, and those types of things.
The fire protection sounds like general fund. The water quality sounds like water department. So maybe one needs 50-50 splits on these sorts of...
If I could just add to that, during our discussions, we're looking at the street and sidewalk program as well. So we are making that a priority as far as where those infrastructure capital project funds go. We use MFT funds, and then we use the infrastructure capital funds. And by that, I'm talking about the non-referendum, or the non-home rule referendum sales tax, the 0.5%. That's what I'm referring to. Those are restricted to infrastructure. So when we're looking at using those funds as well as the MFT, we're using that for our street program, which includes streets and sidewalks. And then, assuming that we've got monies still out of that infrastructure capital fund, then we're looking at applying those funds to the water main work is what we're proposing. So we just want to make sure that you
you're on board with that and everyone is in agreement that we can utilize that approach to the, using those funds. So it would be a matter of using water funds and the restricted infrastructure funds, understanding that streets and sidewalks are a priority with utilization of those monies.
Dan, just out of curiosity, if you were to improve all areas that require improvement in terms of flow, is there a price tag to that?
No, not yet. What we're trying to do is put a plan together where we would, over the next several years, address those issues.
Got it.
And that was one of the things that I talked
year,
about,
right.
The cap, the long-range
right.
capital
right.
program, the citywide long-range capital program. We don't have that.
Okay.
Yeah, this year we're looking at a
piecemeal.
I think the numbers we were looking at today is about a $2 million street program. Of that $2 million, about 10% of that is water main improvements.
Oh, okay.
So you're looking at about $200,000, I think, was the number that we were looking at, or somewhere around there. So 150 to 200. So
for the upcoming budget.
For this coming year, right? All right. Some other items that will be coming up. Our water towers need to be painted. Kirk Road and Logan Avenue, both of them are in that area. We had a consultant come out and take a look at them and evaluate them, and they're at the point where they need to be painted.
Can I get Sam Hill's volunteer?
No, I already said no, that wasn't a good volunteer.
Dan, just for my benefit,
have workers comp.
Yeah, perhaps others will have the same question. Other than aesthetics, to paint a water tower, is what's the utility of that?
Prevent the rust.
That's it.
That's the main purpose of it. With that, we're estimating it's about $200,000 per tower. So you're looking at $400,000.
Sponsorship.
We've got Kirk Road with the Cougars right down the road.
Yeah.
Question came up. Should we be asking them to find out if
The scoop on this.
Is there any interest in pursuing something like that if they were interested?
Yeah.
Or if anyone were interested.
Make me an offer. Or anyone interested.
Make me an offer.
I got new owners, too.
This is business.
St. Charles North welcomes you to Geneva. Yeah, very nice. The Van Gescom family welcomes you.
Cougars get utilities from us, so we should cooperate with them, right?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Same with the Logan with the high school. Is there any interest in talking to them?
Yes, because the high school currently has contracts in place with certain vendors that may very well be interested in apportioning a part of their co-branding in that regard.
About on our trucks. Check it.
All right.
Can we do some sort of staff wardrobe?
Assuming we're not going to be able to get sponsorship to cover the full $200,000 per tower. One of the ideas that was brought up is there's a couple ways to fund this. You could put it into your capital, in the water capital, as a capital expense. Another way to look at it, and I think we talked about this a little bit with our water rate task force, is putting a one-time fee, one fiscal year fee, where the residents or the rate payers would pay an increased monthly rate for that year while that water tower or water towers are being painted. So you would increase the base rate of your water bill X dollars per month to cover the cost of the $400,000 or whatever, if we're able to reduce it to cover that fee, and then after that year, that rate would go away. It's something carpenters build. If you've been up Randall Road and you see that short tower that has rust all over it, that's how they're going about painting that tower.
Your statement that this will go away will not probably happen, because once you invent a capital fee as part of your water bill, my guess is every year you find something to put on it. So what this is doing is saying that the water bill will now have two separate parts to it, one water usage and the other capital fund.
Well, that will be ultimately the city council to expire that.
I understand, but it probably won't go away is my guess.
But if we put it out there as a
paint the water towers line.
It's a sunset provision.
That expires when the water towers are painted. Then the next capital improvement we would have to vote on as another separate line.
Right. Each item would be voted on.
So it's not just a perpetual capital line. It's a specific targeted.
You want to live with all the people who will claim one that don't need painting, and two, I'll volunteer to do it at that price.
Dan, what we were talking about, around $5 per bill.
We haven't run the numbers, right. But I mean, it just throwing it out, the rough numbers, it was
in that ballpark. Between $5 and $6.
Yeah, I was doing that.
Per month.
Anyway, interesting.
So that's an idea. The other item that we've been dealing with is we have several unincorporated properties within Geneva's boundaries. And over the years, we've had requests by those unincorporated properties to connect or annex into the city. And usually, by the time I tell them, here's what the fees associated with hooking up to the water, sewer, and electric, they usually run. One idea that I've been talking to the health department, because there's certain circumstances per code that if they're within 250 feet of the city's sewer, the sewer or water per county code, if they're within those distances to city facilities, the health department does not allow them to hook up or to redo a septic line or a well. So I'm generally putting these estimates together because they have a bad well or septic or both. It's not cheap when you include electric, water, and sewer to make those improvements. And what I found out from the health department is that these residents can, or commercial properties, can file a hardship, basically showing that it costs too much, it's cheaper for me to replace my septic or well than to hook up to city facilities. So they go through that process and ultimately get it waived through the county. One thing that the health department said we could do, Aurora has done this, is create rates for properties outside the city limits that would require them to, they could hook up to city sewer or water. We couldn't do it for electric because of the statute that you have to be annexed within the city. But we would allow them to hook up to city sewer or water or both, and they would pay a rate, likely a higher rate. In Aurora's case, I believe, I can't remember what the percentage, it's like 50% or more.
Aurora is triple, Montgomery is double.
Double. The actual rates that residents, city residents.
I was going to say, could the city bond up front the extensions and then add on to their bills for that specific annexation a line that said bond payment? And so, in other words, we're upfronting the money by borrowing it and putting it in, and they're paying it off time. That would be better than them. They might accept that better than just doubling the rates. They would have the rate that everyone else city plays, plus they would have a special line which says bond amortization for their hooking up. And that way, and again, then you just do a simple payback calculation. How many years does it take for us to more than recoup the investment it's going to make us in time and effort to organize this bonding effort?
What I was proposing, and that's an option. Another option is have them still do the connections. They would run the services from our facilities to their property. So that would be their expense. But in order for the benefit of not, you know, annexing to the city but still having city sewer and water, they pay a higher rate. And that's something that the health department said that many communities are going to be able to address this issue. Because long term, I think the county, along with the city, we would ultimately like to see these properties annexed within the city. I think that
maybe the advantage of a bond is it becomes absolutely clear what the extra rate is they're paying to everybody. It's absolutely clear. It's a separate line. They know what it is. They can look at the bond. They can see what the interest they're paying on it, et cetera, and they can see when it pays off. But when it pays off, presumably they then revert back to being an ordinary customer.
I would say they become an ordinary customer once they annex and become an actual.
Right. My only apprehension about the bonding is that do we do any damage short term or long term to our bonding authority as a corpus?
Right.
In order to serve one.
If we were going to bond, I mean, I would recommend if we bond, we would bond for an improvement to do some of the improvements to get a strip of properties that have, like Western Avenue, for instance, there's a stretch there that if the city, if there was a consensus of those residents along there that they want to come to the city, then we would bond, put them, or do an SSA, this is what we've talked about, and that way it would get paid for, it'd go on to their tax bill, and then they would, you know, that'd be one way for them to be able to spread out that payment.
And they'd see it go away.
Right.
I mean, I paid an SSA for 3 years to widen West Lane into a full street. It was fine. It was on my bill for 3 years and disappeared. I was quite happy.
What would be the infrastructure requirements for the annexation?
You're in the neighborhood. Well, electric by itself, we have those numbers. I don't have them with me. It's in the neighborhood of a couple million, 2 to 3 million, at least.
Yeah.
Because I think electric by itself is a million. Do you remember what it is? Electric?
I don't remember.
I think between electric, water, and sewer, it's probably in the neighborhood of 3 million. I could get those numbers off.
I think it ultimately depends on the final build-out of that campus.
Right.
But, well, I mean, where we're at now.
Oh, where we're at now? Approximately 7 the last time we calculated, I think.
Yeah.
But if you're annexing the houses along Western, you can calculate the payback a little bit more accurately because you know exactly what, fairly closely, what property values you're adding to the EBA, right?
Right.
EAV. So you can calculate a payback on that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a clear direction?
I don't know.
Now, what we heard from Ellen is, of course, that it doesn't pay back.
For houses.
For residences.
I would recommend that we go with a special rate that is 1.5, 2, or 3, similar to other communities. Why reinvent the wheel?
Special service area, basically.
No, it's just
a special rate.
No.
Flat fee. Yeah.
Unless you get a group of homes that want to come in.
Right.
You get a group.
Well, no group.
Well, we don't do it for a group. You're not going to extend it one house at a time.
Well, there are individual properties.
There are. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
That's the one we're dealing with right now.
There's one we're dealing with right now that sits on multiple acres, but one homestead. When we shared with the gentleman the connection fee, it I think shortened his life. So.
Well, we're working on ordinance revisions in both the electric and the water, so we'll be bringing that back, that discussion back at that time, and we'll look to pursue an unincorporated rate. Are there any other questions or ideas that you may have for us?
Are there homes down on Fabian Parkway that are interested in this too, perhaps?
I've gotten calls. The problem there is you've got quite an extension to be able to get the utilities.
Yes.
And I usually tell them the only way to really make that work is probably talk to your neighbors. If you could get a group that would be interested, then that's when, because an individual homeowner is not going to come up with that type of money.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
All right.
Thank you. Commander Nash, please come up.
Sorry, sir. You don't want me up there, Mayor. Some with a weapon is needed.
From the dais, any comments? General questions? Mary, is there anything else you'd like to touch on?
One point of information I wanted to share, and then also ask the council if they have any specific direction as we're developing the budget. As I said, we've gone through all the operational budgets, all the capital budgets, all of the goals. So now I'm going to leave on vacation.
Well deserved.
Let Tom crunch all those numbers together and see what the bottom line is. But we're looking to you if you have specific thoughts as a council to give us direction. We're more than happy to try to incorporate that. Otherwise, based on tonight's conversation and information that we heard from you, we'll continue on as we normally do and complete our draft and bring it back to you in March. Point of information I wanted to share with you is that right now Tom and I are working on a refunding of some bonds. Specifically, we're looking at Prairie Green bonds. There's water, wastewater, revenue bonds. But we're looking at refunding both of those, and we think that based on the information that we've gotten back, we should be able to hopefully bring an ordinance to you on the 6th. Next Monday, we're hoping that we can do that, and it looks like about a $260,000 savings for the GO bonds, which would be the Prairie Green refunding, and about $400,000 for alternate revenue bonds in the water fund. So just under $700,000 in savings, and that would not increase our debt on any of those bonds, nor would it lengthen the term of the bonds. It would just be a savings because of the lower interest rates. So we're hoping to lock that in and bring that back to you next Monday, hopefully with an ordinance that you could approve. So,
will we have a presentation by the group that's talking to you about it?
We weren't planning on it, no. But we can try to have somebody here if you want to ask questions. I don't know that they were planning on a presentation. If you want, I can ask them to put something together.
Spear
Financial typically are the ones that...
Doesn't Kevin usually at least come and answer questions?
He does.
Yeah.
He does. He doesn't usually give us a presentation, but he's here to explain and answer questions, if that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. Kevin McKenna.
From our professionals in the audience, except for the Trib guy. Nagel? Do you guys know that Rick Nagel was the master of ceremonies for a Hall of Fame induction this past Saturday? Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Clearly a lot of people gave a damn about that statement. So, Chief, are you ready for dancing? Paul, wake up the Chief, will you? See if he's ready for dancing.
He's trying to get rested up before Saturday night. He's going to need it.
It's a sellout crowd, Chief. By the way, are you off duty that night in case there's a fire, like, ordinance violation in terms of how many people are watching you dance?
Mr. Mayor, if I could, I just wanted to thank the council. I know this is an extra meeting this month and not a regularly scheduled one, but thank you. We appreciate the discussion and hearing your thoughts as we're moving this forward. So thank you to our council members also that have attended our budget staff meetings. Hopefully we didn't put you to sleep.
A motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
A motion by Marx.
Oh, second.
Second by Flanagan. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Good night.